Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You're listening to At the Mic with Keith, an independent podcast production.
And welcome to this edition of At the Mic. I'm your host, Keith Malinak. Recently, I sat down with Rob Chickering from the Blaze TV and radio networks. If you enjoy the Glenn Beck Show or any of the programming on the Blaze, the guy who has built the sets and the infrastructure bringing you that programming is the technical mind of Rob Chickering. Rob's worked closely with Morton Downey Jr. He tells us about his time with him. He's jumped out of an airplane countless times. He's a photography enthusiast, and we got into the ins and outs of that hobby. And as of this moment, he still owes me a plate of smoked salmon. Here's my conversation with Rob Chickering on this edition of At the Mic. Rob, welcome.
Hi.
What's going on, man?
Oh, just having a podcast day with you.
Yay!
It's like a tea party, but a podcast.
Yeah, you're going to get thirsty during this because I'm going to ask a lot of questions and you don't have any water. You didn't come prepared.
I drank water before I got here, so I think I'm okay.
Very good, very good. Well, I don't know if you know how this works, but I've already emailed you a list of questions. By the way, the list getting longer and longer than I set it out, so I apologize.
I asked people, like, other people have done this podcast. And I said, did you have this question? Like, no, he must be adding on to it.
Yeah, yeah, I think it started.
So
like,
in like a month, it'll be 17 pages because it's like two right now.
I think
now,
we've
right?
gone from 18 questions. I don't know. We're up to about 30 or so.
Now, do you remember the bit I told you I was going to do?
Nope. Okay. I don't remember at all.
I told you that I was going to do one completely incorrect answer. So there's one
I've
answer
gotta figure out where
that
you're lying.
Not lying.
To my listeners?
Yeah, pretty much. And if you let it go through, then you have lied to your listeners.
So are you going to, at the end, if I haven't figured it out, are you going to reveal which was the lie about you?
I'll have to remember it. But yeah, it's been a while since I filled
it out. I'll have to remember it. How many lies do you tell?
My life is a lie, Keith.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I know which one it is.
So were you born in Washington, D.C.?
I was.
Yay!
I was born in Washington, D.C. Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
You going to mark them yes or true?
No, I'm going to be like, yay.
Okay, we got tambourine.
Yeah, okay, that'll be the one.
Tambourine of yes.
Okay, so when I suspect a lie, I'll give you the egg shaker, okay?
All right.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, there we go.
All right, Washington, D.C.
Yep.
And then you grew up in Rockville, Maryland.
Yep, just outside of D.C.
Great song by R.E.M.
R.E.M., yeah.
Don't go back to Rockville.
Yeah.
Now, have you been back to Rockville?
Not recently. My mom has left. There's nothing in Rockville left for me, except for my old high school. That's about it.
All right. Well, how was it growing up in Rockville, Maryland?
It was, you know, a typical suburb, born in 64. So my parents bought the property, built the house. You want to know what their mortgage payment was?
Oh, this my gosh. Crazy. I'm going to love it and hate it at the same time.
Take a guess.
So their mortgage payment.
Yeah, they bought the property and built the house in the early 60s, I think.
And was it a 30-year fixed?
I believe. And when they paid it off, they were pretty excited.
I don't know, man.
$250. That's crazy.
That is so
You can't
great.
Even buy a car for that.
No kidding.
So, yeah. But Rockville was like a typical, you know, suburb of D.C. You felt like you're in a large metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're really kind of called DC home, essentially. Okay. But, you know, it was cool because you could just, you know, on a weekend, you just go down to the Smithsonian if you wanted to.
Oh,
you know,
it's
just
cool.
Like, you know, the things that you take for granted that people, like, make a trip to DC. I could do that any weekend.
Okay.
So it was a cool place to grow up. I had tons of friends, could walk anywhere. It was a good, safe neighborhood kind of thing. Typical, good, decent place to a suburbia lifestyle, I guess you could call it.
There's an individual who we work with here at Blaze TV.
Oh, boy.
Named Mark Tate.
Yes, Mark Tate.
And what he tends to do is when I'm conducting these interviews, these conversations, he just kind of sneaks in here and starts dismantling the set.
He steals stuff.
He steals stuff. I call him the thief in the night. He comes in here. He starts taking stuff.
Mark has a camera rental business going, and he rents the cameras during the day.
Which is what's happening
now. It's weird. It's how we fund our lunches, so it's okay.
Oh,
it's allowed. It's,
I
it's
see.
All good.
I see.
Occasional beer runs and things like that.
Mark, do you want to say hi to everyone?
Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Mark.
So this would be a good chance for me to take a picture, as I typically do in the course of these podcasts.
Well lit in here.
It's so beautiful, Rob. Oh, by the way, I'm going to shake the tambourine on the...
Okay.
That sounds like a euphemism for something. Rockville, Maryland, I'm going to believe that you were you grew up there. So,
jeez, Keith, shake your tambourine some other time.
You got a brother who's 5 years older than you?
Yes.
You're going to confirm that?
Yes,
true?
Confirmed.
Okay,
confirmed
very
true.
Very good. And what's his name? Like, is he
John?
Cool? I mean, did you like him growing up? I mean.
My brother, you know, 5 years is interesting because you're not really super close. You're outside of the range
that's
of, like,
right
schools.
There, yeah.
You're like, but I was always compared to my brother when I went through school.
Oh, I bet that was fun, right?
Oh, yeah, because he was a much better student.
Oh, no.
I was a horrible student.
Uh-huh.
Like, I could barely clear a class without getting a D. And, you know, a lot of, like. Well, your brother was really smart. What happened to you? Kind of like conversations would occur in school. So not terribly close, but we're, you know, we stay in touch. He lives in Georgia now.
Oh, whereabouts?
He's outside of Atlanta.
Whereabouts?
I couldn't tell you. He just moved there. It's like a little suburb. He lived in Franklin, Massachusetts for forever and worked for Fidelity Investments. And he just retired.
Well, let's find out next time you talk to John, the smart sibling, why don't you find out?
I don't even know if I have his address on my phone.
Oh, wow.
I mean, so I
can wait while you look it up. I can just go over here
I'll
and just kind of.
You do a little tambourine music?
Yeah, because, you know, I was born and raised in Marietta, Georgia, Cobb County, which is northwest of Atlanta. So if that's where he's living, that would be a small world, but not really since.
I guess he's not at,
more crowded.
No, he's
there.
A little bit outside of. No, I still have his address in here.
And while you're looking, okay, so you don't know.
Yeah,
all
I'll
right.
let you know. We
wow,
can.
You guys are
we can.
Close.
We can append this. We can come back and revisit that.
Yeah, you
question.
Guys are obviously really tight. So I guess we should take an opportunity to explain to people what you do here, because I can't believe now. John must be a genius if he's the smart one. Because you're very intelligent and you
Thank
get a
you.
Lot of stuff done around here that requires a skill that I don't possess, which is simple math. And you just explain what you do because you keep Glenn Beck's Blaze TV network on the air effectively.
Yeah, essentially. That's a really good way to put it. My job is the, it's such a hoity title. The SVP of studio operations.
Is that a senior vice president?
Yes, it is. I have an S in front of my VP.
That's awesome.
So, I essentially kind of run the crew and the whole operation that is the back end to this place. So from lights to this microphone that we're using to the studio that this audio is running through or the studios next door with all the cameras and those lights and the signal, how it gets to our viewers over the internet now, used to be via satellite.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is under my responsibility. And then the crew and people that do the work. You know, like Sarah in the other room or Martin running the board for you in the morning.
Yeah.
He's kind of part of my team.
That's cool.
But it's really cool. And Glenn's really fun and a challenge to work for because he constantly is pushing to do new things. And he has a vision which is insane sometimes. Like, you're like, what? And then you see it on television and you're just like, oh, my God, he did see that. You know, so he's fun to work for.
You're the guy who builds the sets.
Yeah, we have somebody do them if they're really complicated. We try to do the basic stuff ourselves. Actually, we were just building a set flat in the back before this. So just get ready for Allie's new set. So, yeah. So the simpler stuff we'll do ourselves just to save some money. But if we have like a really complex thing We have some set builders and scenic people that do that for us, but then we oversee it. My team oversees the actual construction of it, and like, is it in the right place, and how does it look, and are the colors right, and those kinds of things.
What's the date that Allie Stuckey, her new set, is going to debut, do you think?
Well, we'll have it done probably by the 18th. That's our target day, and then she'll do some rehearsals, so you might see it by the beginning of June.
Okay, I'll be editing this part out of the podcast, since this will post after that debut.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. So, exactly. So you've been a radio-minded guy since you were a kid, like a lot of us. Explain your childhood and what gave you the radio bug in how you applied that.
That's really interesting. I kind of started messing around with audio when I was in high school and junior high school, and I would do recordings and make, you know, cassette mixes and random stuff. And I actually did a real radio play for a buddy of mine with cassette decks and reverbs, and just, it was stupid. I mean, just think about the things that I have. I got a boombox that had stereo recording, and I went out and started recording sound effects, you know, with two microphones.
Nice.
And somewhere there's a picture of me with a stick with two mics on the end of it, and I was out there recording things.
Oh,
it's
very
just
cool.
Just crazy. So when I got to college, I was on the engineering track in college because my brother's an engineer, my dad was an engineer, so I was like, all right, I'm going to do the engineering thing. Well, it turns out my roommate had tried out or auditioned for the campus radio station at school, and I was like, it never even occurred to me to do that. And I auditioned, got myself a 6 to 10 a.m. Sunday morning shift on WMUC AM.
Muck.
And it was a carrier current station, so you could only hear it inside the buildings of the campus.
Oh, wow.
Didn't even actually have a broadcast transmitter.
Wow. Shout out to KRNU in Lincoln, Nebraska. I thought 100 watts was a weak station in 90.3 on the FM dial.
And we had an FM station that was 10 watts lookout, and it was alternative and a mess. We were pretty much like CHR.
Was the transmitter at least on top of a tall building?
It was on top of the building that we were in, so it wasn't bad. You could actually hear it around campus.
That's
pretty
cool.
Well, but yeah, so that got me started, and then eventually I started tinkering around and doing production and started working in the studios and learning how the audio flow worked and just kind of teaching myself the whole setup, and then eventually got in a job. And my first job in broadcasting was for WRC in Washington, D.C. They had used to be owned by NBC. Okay. Greater Media was the broadcast company that bought the station and turned it into a big band station. And they needed board ops for the weekend. So I was an overnight board op for TalkNet. It was like an old like kind of talk show on NBC before it was Westwood One.
Okay.
And I took that. The ad was posted at the college radio station for $3.75 an hour.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't care. I'll take the job. I just wanted to get in radio. And got the job. And when they offered me $6.50, about fell on the floor.
You're like, wow.
Yeah. So I did that for quite a while and eventually met the chief engineer there, started working for him. And he can tell you all kinds of stories about that. But we won't go down that rabbit hole too much. But eventually I started interning in the engineering department. And that kind of started my career.
Okay.
And quit school because I was learning more at the radio station than I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
And at least that was my justification for it.
And
the University of Maryland sent me a little letter about academic dismissal that kind of like got things rolling.
Oh, so that's kind of a prompt.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we're kicking you out. So I guess I'm not going to come back. And so I was learning a lot and loving radio. And you know how it is when you first get started, you just go knee deep into it. And that's what I did. And so I eventually started building studios, started doing a bunch of different stuff, had a full-time job, and it's, almost 40 years later. I think I started in, like, 83, 84.
Uh-huh. And somewhere in there, you were I'm going to reach for the tambourine. I believe it's true. Maybe.
So you're not confident in your shape.
A segment producer for Morton Downey Jr.
I was. I jumped out of radio engineering and got into programming a little bit more and worked for Mort. I actually wound up going on the road with him a whole bunch. He was our talk show host in D.C. We changed format to talk radio. And we hired Mort, and he did middays. And he was living in Philly and coming down to D.C., like, randomly. We had him on remote. Okay. He could do his show from his house back in the early days. And so they decided they were going to have him do his show from restaurants all over D.C., like high-end restaurants like the Palm, and that's where the big decision makers were. So we'd be set up in the middle of these really nice restaurants. So I was on the road with him, God, for almost a year. Hmm. And so he and I built
up a rapport.
How was that? It was fun. He was a really cool dude.
It seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, okay, he seems like he's so high intensity once the camera's rolling. But it almost seems like,
I bet off the air,
he is a normal, just chilled out guy. Yeah?
It's a show. Yeah. I mean, it's not like it wasn't who he was. He wasn't making up a persona, but he would amplify it.
Right.
And he was a big personality guy, but he was really good to me. And so worked for him for quite a while, worked on his TV show as well as a segment producer. We relaunched his TV show in Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. And got into TV. That was my first touch into TV producing. And so we wrote, booked guests, did everything. And we would do 1 week of shooting. We'd do 15 shows in a week. And we just bang them out. And we're shooting in Palm Springs. So I had to do the radio show in the morning, do the TV show, three TV shows a day for 5 days. It was a pretty crazy schedule. Wow. A lot of writing, a lot of bit coming up with, things that we'd have to do. But it was fun. And eventually that kind of fell apart. I peeled off and got another job in radio, started working freelance. In and around that period, my life took a little bit of a turn, and I started skydiving. And I'm not sure if I even put that on there. Did I put it on? Oh, you are incorrect, sir.
All right,
with the shaker.
Tell me about skydiving.
So while I was in Palm Springs, I worked with a guy who was a comedian. He was like the host of Mort's show, and he took me on what they call a demo jump, where he went on a skydive. He was a professional skydiver, and he just you sit in a seat next to the pilot. They open the door of the airplane, and out he goes. And I'd never been a daredevil kind of person, but there was something about it. It caught me.
Oh, boy.
And so we went, did a tandem skydive. That's where you're attached to an instructor.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. So I got back to Dallas, and I found a local skydiving operation here. It's about an hour north of here. I took my training, got my license to be a professional skydiver. And that was me for a long time.
Wait a
every
minute.
Weekend jumping.
So wait, when did you get to Dallas then?
Was in Dallas. So I was moving between Dallas and California when I was working for Mort. Sorry, it's a little complicated.
I gotcha.
And so I was out of work, skydiving, doing freelance. I built a bunch of studios and did a bunch of stuff.
So when you're a professional skydiver. So when you are, what does that mean? Like that people hire you for aerial photography?
Well, the professional part didn't really start at that point. So I was just what they call a fun jumper on the weekends, jumping and having fun. Eventually started shooting video and taking pictures with a camera and my helmet. And that's where it kind of becomes professional.
Because I know you do, we can talk about it later, photography.
Yeah.
Is that where it started then?
Yeah, I had always wanted to be a photographer or take pictures. My dad was a photographer, and we had a dark room in the basement. So I always kind of had a vibe for that, and I just never worked it. And skydiving was cool because it took you to a place where it's like, I can take pictures at 10,000 feet while going 120 miles an hour. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, just don't forget the shoot
Exactly. So actually, we wound up taking pictures for a sunglasses company, and doing things. So The whole skydiving thing was fun, and it was pretty hardcore for about 3 years. Jumped a lot. When I finished, when I stopped jumping, I think I have about 1,600 jumps. It became professional when I met a buddy up there, and he decided to put a sky surfing board on his feet. And it's kind of like a snowboard, but it's much more rigid, and it eventually became a sport in the X Games. So the first years that the X Games came out, they had sky surfing.
Oh, wow.
So if you go back and look, you'll find me on ESPN or ESPN2 on some of the training or qualifying meets. We would have four meets per year, and that's where it became professional. So I was in the X Games, I think, 3 years.
Wow.
So don't lift up the shaker. You can lift the tambourine. It's provable on the internet. I can show you video.
I was just going to the old Google here.
Do two guys with jobs sky surfing. You'll find our old demo video.
Okay.
So you can do that later. You don't have to waste time while you're doing the podcast.
I'll get this. Yeah, okay. So that's pretty awesome. When did you get to Dallas then? And you're what year are we at?
90, let me think. 93. It was about the time when the Koresh thing was happening. I literally landed at DFW Airport. My buddy picked me up. He says, "You hear what's happening?" Yeah, so it was pretty crazy. And the station I worked for at that time where Mort was on the air was a kind of a heavy conservative talk radio station. Like, its bumper sticker was a giant pistol. You know, it was awesome. It was Hot Talk Radio 1190 KGBS. So they were knee-deep in it. And so that was the whole period of time where I got to Dallas was the Koresh compound world. It was kind of a fun little marker in time.
Yeah. No, that was like the first few weeks of the Clinton administration. So that would have been early 93.
Yeah. It sounds right. Like February.
February. And I think it went to like April 1st, somewhere in there.
Yep. And the whole skydiving thing kind of kicked off.
Or no, it had to be April 20th, right?
We're going down that rabbit hole.
The reason I'm doing that is because I think that was the whole reason why Timothy McVeigh chose
you're right.
Okay. I mean, we're being total nerds now. At least I am.
We have to figure out the dates. Yeah.
Oh, I can't let this stuff go. Anyhow.
Because it went on for quite a while.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Just every morning you get the update on like today, April 19th. Okay. So there you go. Was it in Dallas when you met your wife, Julie?
Yes.
Okay. So tell us about her.
At a bar, believe
it or not.
All right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I had made, I think, my 10th skydive that day. I was at a bar around the corner from my apartment.
So I made my 10th skydive.
That's exactly the way it was. Exactly the way
was
it
that,
was.
Was that how, was that like your pickup line? Hey,
oh,
guess
yeah.
what I've been doing today.
Totally. I mean, you know, you're skydiving. Might as well use it, right?
Yeah. Was she impressed?
She was somewhat impressed because she had actually made a jump. Her brother was a jump pilot, and she had actually made what they call a static line a long time ago.
Was it? Okay. I was about to say.
While ago.
It wasn't like that day. Oh, you
know what? I did too.
Okay.
And the whole reason she was in there with her girlfriend because they were going to go be flight attendant scabs for American Airlines. Flight attendants were on strike, and they were going out for a last drink before their training, and it turns out they signed the contract the next day, so they didn't have to do that.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So do you guys ever skydive together?
We used to, yeah. Yeah, a lot. And so, you know, I think she kind of figured if she wanted to see me on the weekends, she had to join in. But she enjoyed it, and she was actually in the X Games kind of organization that we were part of. She was actually a judge at one point. So she was actually judging my skydives
without
in competition.
Without y'all knowing at the time?
No.
It was cool.
Everybody was cool with it. And, you know, she'd come out of the booth, they'd have a trailer, and she could look at me, and she's like, "Yeah, it didn't go so well, did it?" I'm like, "Yeah, it didn't go so well."
Thanks, Judge.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate
it. That. Yeah. All right.
She was pretty tough on me.
Very cool.
Because she knew, you know, the thing that sucked is she had seen all the jumps. She knew what they could be, right?
Oh.
So it was actually probably
worse. She'd seen
worse.
The best case scenario.
Exactly.
So when you weren't able to do that, it was time
we effed it all up. It was like, okay, you screwed that move up. You're like, God dang it.
You're not supposed to know that. You're just supposed to be impressed that I'm doing it, period. And you guys have a son together?
We do. He's 21.
Wow.
He's starting his senior year at OU after this summer.
Okay. What's he majoring in up there?
He's on the engineering track. He's doing industrial engineering, which is pretty cool. He's digging that.
Oh. So he got your...
He's pretty smart.
Yeah.
And he's got my wife's brain, too.
Okay.
He's a pretty sharp kid.
Very cool.
Good student, unlike his dad.
So when you're not building sets and keeping giant communication networks on the air, you obviously, we talked about the skydiving.
Yep.
Kind of got into the photography.
Yep.
We'll get to cooking in a second, but let's stop on photography for a second. Do you do that freelance?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's pretty much more like a hobby. I mean, I have been paid a few times, so I guess I could call it professional.
Okay.
Who
are some people that like you?
Oh, like a couple local artists will spiff me $150 to come shoot their show.
Nice.
You know, it's kind of nice. It pays for the gas.
Okay.
And the first show I shot, like first music show, when we're saying shows, I guess we should say music, like concerts. Concerts are pretty much what I shoot. Small bar stuff or any bands, you know, I love the energy on a stage and trying to capture that.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot 99% in black and white or process everything in black and white.
Why is that?
It's just my style.
Mm-hmm.
I like the look of it. And I start to see it now. So I see shadow and light. And, you know, when you're shooting in black and white or you know you're going to process it black and white, you don't care about it being brown. You're trying to find contrast or find something that looks dramatic.
Okay.
So I have a kind of a style that I go for. And I think with music, it looks, you know, if you're shooting landscapes, black and white doesn't necessarily always look nice.
Right.
Unless you're Ansel Adams. But,
good point.
Good point. Or, but... In music, I think there's a grittiness to it and an energy that you don't need the color. You know, and but it sucks sometimes because I'll have some shots and I'll look like, oh, the lights are just blue and red and they're all over the place and it looks amazing. And sometimes I'll keep a few, but I try to stick to that, you know, being my style. Okay. I had a teacher who I took a class from in New York, and he said, shoot black and white, give it a shot. And I did. And when I did, I really kind of shifted how I saw photos before I took them. And I like it. You know, it's a little more challenging, and it's given me a bit of a style. So, you know, sometimes you have to set yourself apart in a world where a bunch of people are doing the same thing, and it feels like I have. So I'm really proud of my stuff.
That's cool. Yeah. Can people check it out online or something?
Yeah. TheChickeringProject.com is my website.
TheChickeringProject.com. Yeah. Okay. In doing photography or some of these shoots or anything like that, like, what are some celebrities that you've rubbed shoulders with? We've talked about Morton Downey Jr.
Hmm.
Anybody else come to mind that you've rubbed shoulders with over the years?
In the photography world, no. You know, when I was working my three jobs ago in radio, I was working for Susquehanna Radio. We had a country station and an alternative station. So I got to mix all the bands that came in. So,
oh, cool.
List is pretty long and it's fun. Like, but, you know, but Chris Isaak and, you know, some of these big acts that were in the, like, the 90s to the early aughts, you can name it. And I probably met them, which is kind of fun.
That's the golden era of music, if you ask me.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was great. And, and, you know, it was, I had some fun experiences. I have a crazy story about David Gray, you know, and it just, the things that have happened over time, which are kind of fun. I probably shouldn't tell the story, but just know that it was interesting.
Oh.
But Lyle Lovett, I did a mix for him and had his entire large band in there, like 12, 14 people.
In a radio studio?
Well, we actually had like a performance room, but it wasn't gigantic, but we actually had a performance space, and it was really, really fun to like, and you know, I got to build that out and then actually use it. So mixing music is kind of something I don't get to do hardly anymore. We've had Aaron Watson in, and that's been fun to kind of exercise that muscle again. But it's something I miss, but the photography thing is, I think, that new creative outlet for me. So it's been fun.
I kind of wanted to ask you a follow-up there, you know, with David Gray, a story you're not supposed to tell. I mean, you can't say that and expect me just to, like, gloss over it.
Well, I just don't want to tell it, but it was awkward. It was awkward. No, okay. Tambourine.
But we're not going to hear it, right?
No, I better not tell it.
Well, we can change the names.
Yeah.
David White.
Way.
David Ray. Yeah. Okay. So, cooking. You enjoy cooking.
Yep. I'm the cook for the house, pretty much.
Oh, wow. What's your favorite dish to make?
I smoke salmon, which is legit.
Yeah.
That's probably the best thing I
do. What do you pair that with?
Oh, a little capers and some nice cream cheese.
Maybe. I like it.
I don't know.
Cream cheese, huh?
Yeah, a little whipped cream cheese and a cracker. Huh. Yeah, not bad.
It's a nice, you know. Yeah, I'm going to need you
to
make
some in here.
Really?
You've never had it?
I didn't get the message.
All right. I'll make a batch. I'll whip up a batch this week, and then you can follow up the podcast with a review of my smoked salmon.
Okay. I look forward to that. Very good.
But I'm pretty good at just, like, digging something out of the refrigerator and a bunch of leftovers and throwing some stuff together. Mm. You know, I'm decent. I'm not trained at all, and I'd actually love to take a class to know what I'm actually supposed to be doing, but most of the time it turns out all right.
So what is the tolerable life expectancy of leftovers? You know, obviously it depends on the food, but give us a rundown if you would. Like, when do you start throwing stuff out?
1 week.
For everything? That's your general rule for everything?
Yeah, pretty much. Unless it's like rice or quinoa or something that doesn't have anything spoilage-y in it.
Oh.
You know, but like if it's a, you know, a hamburger patty, yeah, it's gone after a week. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of funny about.
Do you give it to the dog?
You know,
because I mean, like, at
I'm
a week.
Hesitant sometimes.
Uh-huh. Because we actually protect our dogs as well, right? We're like, well, I mean, I could throw it out, or I could give it to you.
I'm just more afraid what might happen to him overnight in the rug in the living room.
Yeah, you know? And then that's a surprise waiting for you in the morning.
Hey, Dad, I gotta go. Gotta go, man. It's like, no, I'm sleeping.
You know there's trouble when you hear the whining at the door.
Or the nuzzle on your arm from the cold nose, like, and it's 3 a.m., like, oh, no.
Right.
Yeah.
So
somebody ate something he shouldn't eat.
I've got a door off of the bedroom, right? And my dog, for whatever reason, the big dog does not like to go out that door, for whatever reason. I don't know, because we forget about him when he goes out that one. I don't know.
But he feels like it's going to be orphaned.
Right. It's like, you've forgotten me too many times.
Maybe he thinks it's a gas chamber.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you, in the middle of the night, when he's whining, he's at that door. He's like, all right.
I'll go out the portal.
It's time. So, and you have a dog and a pig, potbelly pig? How many dogs do you have?
I have one dog, one pig.
Okay, one dog, one pig. Mm-hmm. And the thing about the owning a pig is that it gets one of these.
Ah, well done. Well done. You picked out the pig.
Yeah.
So, I know. I was, you know, what did we call the pig?
Scooter. Here's the thing, y'all. When you're right on your answers, the animal's name and it's lowercase, and you don't bother to capitalize the S, it's a dead giveaway.
Oh, wow, that's right. That's how you vetted it out. Well done, Keith. Well done.
Okay, so, but dogs.
You can thank Clayton Kimbrough for the name.
Did he help you with this?
Yes. I was like, Clayton, I need an animal that isn't mine. He goes, and he came up with a raccoon. I said, that's not a bit believable. And then he goes, all right, pot-bellied pig. And I said, all right, cool.
I love it. Well, Clayton, episode 10 of At the Mic.
I was going to say, he's already aired, correct?
Check the archives, yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell us about Luke. Because he's come up here quite a bit to the
yeah,
studio.
You've seen him. He's a ball energy.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
a wild man.
Mm-hmm.
We got him, you know, as a stray. Somebody found him on a farm kind of thing in our neighborhood. And not that they lived in our neighborhood. They were on a farm and found him. Sounded weird.
I gotcha.
And we decided to take him in.
Oh.
And he's slowly calming his crazy butt down.
How old is he?
I think he's like three and a half, something like that.
Okay.
So he's getting there. Very he's cool. kind of like a cat. He's got a cattle dog head, crazy big giant ears, and a German Shepherd kind of face.
Uh-huh.
And then he's just kind of a runty little dork.
Runty little dork.
But he's awesome, and yeah. he's fun. He's a good dog.
He is a sweetheart, whenever I've interacted with him up here.
Sheds like a now. There's dog hair everywhere.
Seriously, I had my dog, who's a short hair.
Yeah, he's a short hair too.
In the back seat of the truck this past weekend, and I was just looking yesterday. Oh my gosh, there's hair everywhere.
Yeah.
And I reminded myself, this is why I never put you in the truck.
Yes,
because I'm living with your presence for the next 3 months.
Yes, you need the blanket or something to at least absorb the. Yeah. Hair of some
I didn't
type.
Think that through.
But then it's flying. You open your windows. Oh, God.
Oh.
It's like a hair tornado going on in your cabin.
It's
your
on your clothes and stuff. Yeah. Hair tornado. Yeah. All right. So you and I have a very similar taste in music. Alternative, Americana, rock. That's what you listed here.
Mm-hmm.
Who are some of your favorite bands?
The favorite band of all time for me is The Who. Like that. They're my go-to.
Okay. I mean, we're not as synced up as I thought. What are some other good bands you like?
The Police.
I do like. I will say though, The Who has great songs.
Yeah, it's weird that it's a little older than my actual age, I guess. You know, I think the average Who fan is probably more in their 70s, where I'm mid 50s.
Okay.
But it's something my brother introduced me to. He bought a bunch of Who albums, left them.
Uh-huh.
Oh, darn it. He left them, and guess who still has them? But
that's like my stepbrother. Yeah. My stepbrother, my oldest stepbrother, he had this shelf of CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be at work or whatever during the day when I was home during the summer. I have old cassette tapes. I just dubbed everything. I was like, all right, he's never going to let me borrow them.
Yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll just record off of them, and I'll go listen to them on my own time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's like half of my collection when I was a kid.
That's your archive.
It was just these cassette tapes of his favorite music. But anyway.
But probably music from my high school years is probably The Police. You know, that's kind of the soundtrack, if you think about it. Like all those albums from The Police.
Do you like Sting's solo stuff?
Not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But like there's a bunch of country acts I love. I love some of the local Texas stuff that's flying around here, and I've gotten to know a lot of the bands through shooting them.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there's a band Cutthroat Finches, who's one of my favorite bands here in town. They're a Fort Worth band. And they're terrific, and their music is really, really good. And it's kind of like a country Americana vibe. It has a little bit of an alternative turn sometimes.
Huh.
But you know, like some of the country stuff that's around here, they call it red dirt music. It's the anti Nashville thing, and they're kind of like it's an outlaw country vibe. And some of the stuff is really, really, really terrific.
Okay.
So, you know, try to check out, like, that's what I love about Spotify. You can start with a band and just find other bands, you know?
Yeah.
There's another band called the Vandaliers here in town. They're just really, really great.
Uh-huh.
And I've shot them a couple times. So it's fun to get to know these bands. And, you know, like, I heard the Cutthroat Finches on the radio, like, 3 or 4 years ago. And I thought, man, these guys are awesome. They have kind of a Beatles sound a little bit. You know, Sean, who's the lead singer. And then I'm like, I have his number in my phone now.
You know,
we're friends. So his birthday was this weekend, and I sent him a birthday text. I'm like, that's kind of cool.
That
you know,
cool.
Like, I've met and kind of become friends with a lot of the local bands around town. So that's been really fun to, like, on the weekend, that's pretty much what I do. You know, I just go shoot photos. It sucks right now because I haven't taken a picture since, you know, probably, gosh, the last one I was going to do was early March, and I decided not to do it just because this was kicking up, and I wasn't sure, like, being in a crowd, whether that was a good idea.
Society is a fun place right now, huh?
Yeah, it sucks, you know, and, you know, I've got a few band friends. They're talking about doing drive-in concerts.
Oh,
you know,
interesting.
That's kind of the thing they're trying to think about doing. I told the guy I'd come by in my car and shoot it from my car. You know, just stupid stuff.
Fun.
But yeah, it's I'm just jonesing to take pictures. You know, and all I've been doing since is just kind of documenting this world we're in, because I think in a couple of years we'll forget what it was like when there were signs and lines at Home Depot and, you know, that kind of thing. And or in 10 years, you know, what was this era like? And I just wanted to have something that showed it. Like, I was in Fort Worth last 2 weekends ago, and I rode my bike into downtown Fort Worth, the Sundance Square. It's kind of big, touristy, kind of hangout area. They had ropes across all the entrances. You couldn't even go onto the square with signs, and it was a 70-degree Sunday afternoon, and there wasn't a human standing out there.
Oh,
and it's just like, that would be packed with 1,000 people.
Well, you say that you're documenting this era because we'll forget. Do you think we'll forget, or do you think that this is going to become the, quote, new normal,
new
as
normal.
They're calling it? Because I'm hoping...
I think we'll forget.
I'm hoping you're correct. I'm hoping that the remnants of this were standing in line at Home Depot instead of seeing stickers on the floor saying, stand here, stand here. We're seeing just the sticky outline of where the sticker used to be years before. That's what I'm hoping.
Like, I was going to do that yesterday. I was in a grocery store, and I meant to take a picture of the, in like, I think it was in a Tom Thumb, where they were showing you what direction to go down the aisle.
Right.
And I thought, you know, I'll forget that, you know, we'll forget what that was like. So that's one thing that's kind of fun about taking pictures is you get to, like, a little bit of a documentary kind of vibe to it. So.
But as someone who takes pictures as often as you do, do you enjoy the world where we would get stuff developed and then we would have a huge box of photographs, 90% of which are crap?
Yeah.
Or do you like having everything digitally? And before you answer, those pictures, at least in my world, are so out of sight, out of mind.
The digital ones?
Yeah, because you really have to sit down and think, okay, now I'm going to look at pictures.
Yeah.
And turn on, fire up the laptop and go through them that way. Whereas a box of pictures or a photo album, you can just sit down and just start looking at them.
Yeah.
Which do you prefer, though?
All right, let me ask you a question. When you were a kid, when you got bored, did you open the family photo album and just look at it?
Yeah.
I did all the time.
All the time.
Yeah. And I miss that, and I agree with you 100% that photos get locked away on a hard drive, but I love the immediacy of being able to go shoot a show. I'll take 1,000 pictures at a show because I can take 1,000 pictures at a show.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Yeah you don't
and
have
I'll
to.
I'll keep 1 out of 10, and then I'll take that 100, and I'll dilute that down to 30 that I want to keep, and I'll put 15 of them on Facebook. They live on Facebook, you know, and I think the only, if there's one thing good about Facebook that I actually don't mind is the, hey, 1 year ago you posted this photo. It's kind of fun because you get that, oh, yeah, I remember when I shot that show or that album or whatever. Or somebody will randomly like it, and they're like, what are they looking at that? Oh, somebody was looking at that album randomly or Instagram or something like that. So I think for that it's great. But, yeah, for family, like, I don't think my son has seen a picture I've taken in a long time because they're all sitting on a hard drive.
Yeah.
Or they're, you know, it's not like he's going to go out to my Flickr page and look at his pictures from the Thanksgiving parade that when he was 6 years old and catching a football with his friends. He would never. Now, if he needed it, like for something for school, I can get to it. I can print them out and make that thing for him. So I think it's just a different way of thinking. And I think for kids, the immediacy of media is really interesting, and I'd love to see somebody do a study on this because, you know, when we grew up, it was dad took a photo, and maybe in a week or 2 weeks, he had them developed, and then maybe drug out the slide projector and shot them up on the wall, you know, the whole thing. Or you know, and now it's like, I remember shooting a video with my son where I had one of the first Sony little cameras that had a monitor on it, and he said, and he would look at me and go, I want to see me, I want to see me.
Exactly.
You know, so it's a different... I think it's fascinating, you know, and the immediacy of it is cool, but I still like shooting in film. I have a Polaroid camera, which is fun.
I was about to bring them up. I was about to say how, you know, you would drop off your roll of film at the drugstore.
Yep.
And you'd, like you said, wait a week or two and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Or you'd go to that the little mobile kiosk thing in the middle of the parking lot.
Yeah.
What are those things called?
Oh, the photomat thing.
So you got that. And then today, the digital camera equivalent to today was the Polaroid.
Yes.
Where it would spit out and you'd wave it in the air and wait for it to develop. Mm-hmm. That was our immediate gratification as far as that concerned. Yeah. We no longer have to wait for that stuff. Mm-mm. It's all immediate on our phones and we can not waste film, which to me is just a waste of money as far as, like I said, 90% of what you're going to go get developed is crap anyway.
Yeah.
So there is that cool aspect to it. One thing that I have done is I have on my phone just the year in all these folders. So right now I have a 2020 develop folder. And at Christmas time, as soon as Christmas morning is done, I go and I develop all of the pictures
for that. You get prints made of those.
You get prints made. Okay. Put them in a photo album.
That's smart.
But the thing is, photo albums are becoming harder and harder to find to purchase.
Hmm. You don't have them like done and printed as a book?
I've got to start doing that.
Yeah, that's just as easy. Yeah. Like my sister-in-law did that for my son when he graduated high school, and it was the coolest thing ever. It brought me to tears. Mm. She went through and picked all the photos up from when he, you know, when he was five at their house, and they live in Washington State, and so it was really neat, like seeing all these pictures. And she did a beautiful job, and it was an Apple photo book, and I still have it. It's sitting on our coffee table. It's probably the only photo album that I could walk into the house and put my hands on.
Yeah,
you know, and so yeah, I. There is something missing there, but I don't miss I'd go skydiving and take 15 rolls of film over a weekend, drop them off at Fox Photo, and God, what I spent on photo developing.
Right, that's the other thing.
And just sitting there in Fox Photo going, keep.
Yep.
Nope. You know, it's like going through the pile and keeping six out of the seven rolls, you know, and it's like, it's nice just popping through, or while I'm at a show, I think the thing for a photographer, I'm jumping all over the place, but I apologize. Mm. The thing that I learned that I think is cool for digital photography for new photographers is the learning curve is so much shorter on developing your style and in developing an eye. Because I think it's like any artist, they have to try something to know if that works, right?
Right.
Chefs, they try a spice and it works or it doesn't work. With photography, it's you shoot something, and unless you're just amazing, and you already see it in your eye, you sometimes have to see it in frame and go, oh, I love that angle, or I like how I was here instead of in front of them, or the depth that I got here, or the lights in the background. When I almost get that in show, like I might just pop through and take a look during in between bands and go, oh, that worked. Mm-hmm. And so I've been able to kind of develop my craft a little faster just by being able to get that feedback quicker, you know, so, and be able to take multiple pictures.
That's true. Yeah.
And so you have tons of respect for these photographers that shot on film all their entire life and do these beautiful photographs. And it's like, they didn't mess anything up.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't, but it is fun to go. Like I still have a couple film cameras and I will go take a roll of film. And like, I think I had three rolls of film that I had for like, almost 2 years.
Isn't that exciting?
I sent them in. I couldn't even remember what was on them. And it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that show. All right, it's like a friend I shot. But back to the Polaroid, I did just recently buy a Polaroid camera.
Oh, wow. And they're coming back, huh?
Yeah, it's funny. They're kind of a bit of a resurgence, and I bought black and white Polaroid film. And so what I do at shows sometimes is I have it in like a little pouch on my hip, and I take crowd shots or people at the show, and I just hand it to them. I put a sticker for my website, and I hand it to them. And it's the, like, I've had people, like, try to pay me for it. Like, can I Venmo you money for it? And I'm like, well, yeah, I guess, but I don't. Yeah, just take the dang thing. It's a buck, you know. But it's been like, it's fun. It's a really cool way to kind of get people to remember you. And I've taken pictures of the bands, like a lead singer, and I'll throw it up on the stage. And one guy was like, he's like singing and he's looking down at it, developing it. It was the coolest thing. And he picked it up and he goes, well, that's instant gratification or something like
cool.
that. It's just, it's a fun bit, but the Polaroid is a blast.
Yeah.
It's just that weird throwback kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to own one.
No, I mean, think it's a good starter camera for kids.
It's a silly phone, you know?
And that's the thing. There are pros and cons. And the last thing I'll say about photography here, but there are pros and cons to having digital photographs today as opposed to 30 years ago when you had to wait on the film and stuff. But I will say, what a treat it is when you're going through a family member who is either deceased mm-hmm. or getting up there in age and say, take whatever you want or whatever, you know, and you're going through their house. I mean, you stop, you get to that photo album and you're there for hours on end going through that. Whereas if everything's on your phone, mm-hmm. then you're not really sharing that in more of an intimate setting. It's more like what you said on a Facebook or something like that. So I would encourage people to go through the pictures on your phone and get that stuff developed.
Yeah, print a book. Yeah. The books are easy. They're kind of fun, yeah.
Exactly. You've got an interesting talent that I don't possess.
Can't remember what this is.
This is, he's nervous.
Oh, no. Which one did I put down? That? Maybe there were two lies on there.
No. It's parallel park.
Oh, yeah.
And I can parallel park, but it takes a little while, and sometimes I have to get lucky, roll the dice. It was the one thing that I screwed up. I screwed up one time on my driver's test. Otherwise, I would have had a perfect score. Mm-hmm. It was just the one screw up on the parallel parking.
Bumped the curb or something?
But I mean, it was an 88 Oldsmobile, like, Cutlass.
Yeah, I was going to say something big bomber.
It was a boat.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give myself a little slack there. But I will admit that if I'm in a downtown city setting and there's a spot there and there's someone behind me, I mean, I instantly just grip that wheel. I'm like, okay, you can do this, man. Either that or just go around the block until something.
The pressure is on.
Right.
Can Keith do it?
Exactly.
While everybody's waiting for him.
But you can parallel park any vehicle?
Yeah.
That's a big claim there.
My dad taught me two things. One, how to use tools.
Mm-hmm.
Two, how to parallel park.
Uh-huh.
He had this incredible method of teaching it.
Okay.
It's very, very, it's like five steps and you can't mess it up.
Okay. Cause for me, it would be scream in your right ear five times, but that's not the steps you're talking about?
No.
Okay.
No,
what
no.
do you got?
I can't tell you the steps.
You can't tell me?
No.
Oh.
It's a secret.
Okay. I know. Hold on a second. I think your bumper comes even with, well, whatever.
Never mind.
Okay. So
this is an audio medium too. It doesn't really work on that. But just know that there exists this parallel parking method by John Alden Chickering that he developed. I don't know where he got it from, but it works every time. I've been in vehicles that I've never, like first time driving, can parallel park it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. We'll go over
parked
it later.
Parked a massive Suburban in the rain in Houston, Texas, first shot.
Is that the biggest vehicle you've ever had to parallel park?
That was probably one of the big. It was a big like station vehicle.
Okay.
So the windows were all covered, and you know it was hard to see.
Yeah.
And it was pouring down rain. I remember I just nailed that sucker.
Nice.
3 inches off the curb. There you go.
We'll go practice in the parking lot after this taping here today. I'd like to get some tips.
The problem is you don't have to parallel park that often. You know, it's not like it is. We live in a place where it's like, when's the last time you had to parallel park?
I just avoid it. I go around the block until there's two spots together. I can just pull in straight and go, ta-da! Because, you know, 30 minutes later, when there's nothing but cars lining the road, people have no idea how easy it was.
Maybe just do the curb roll-up thing. You just roll up on the curb, you pop back down, and you're in.
Oh, I do that just in a regular parking lot spot out here. Okay, so your earliest memory, do you remember what that is yet?
Because
I'm wondering if you forgot.
I think it might have been shopping or going out with my mom.
Yeah, to the grocery store or something like that. Yeah.
One time my mom left her purse on the roof of the car. It's pretty funny.
Was it?
Yeah, we got to the grocery store. She didn't have her purse.
Oh, no.
She's like freaking out. Like, where's my purse? This describes the neighborhood I lived in.
Uh-huh.
She had gotten in the car, put the purse on top of the car, closed the door, got in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So we drove like crazy all the way back, the 15, 20-minute drive back to the house.
Oh, no.
Purse sitting in the middle of the street. There it was.
Wow. That's helpful. Yeah. I thought you were going to tell me like stuff was just strewn all over the driveway.
Well, the potbelly pig had gotten into it, but it's okay.
Yeah, I got you. Who's had the biggest impact on you in your life?
Easily Marty Sachs. And Marty was the chief engineer of the stations in D.C. for WRC that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me an engineering internship, gave me a shot, and has been probably my best friend and advisor. Professional advisor, emotional advisor, just a great guy.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and he works for Telos Axia, the company that makes those phone devices and broadcast. And, yeah.
Okay, Telos. Yeah, I've heard of that. That pops up everywhere in the broadcast business.
Yeah, he's a big hitter up with them, and he and I have always maintained contact. But yeah, anytime I get back to D.C., we try to get dinner and just hang out and chat. But yeah, he advised me on taking this job.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
that's great. So, your most embarrassing moment. You want to tell us what that was?
What was
it? Because this is, This is a...
And this is recent.
Oh, no. Because, see, this is a lesson that I learned at a young age. And I'm not... And I'll set this up for you to tell your story. But, you know, let me wait. Let you tell your story, and then I'll tell you how I learned this lesson.
Okay.
Without getting burned. But go ahead.
I think mine was last year during the summer. I was at a lumber yard. And it's this kind of place that only sells cedar that's on my deck. So I had a couple of broken deck boards, had to go get some cedar. Well, I'm driving my car that doesn't, you know, they sell this stuff in like 12 foot, 15, 20 foot length. So I need it like 10 feet so I can shove it into my car and close the windows and do the whole thing. So I go up to the door, desk, and girl's helping me out. And I swore she told me she was pregnant. So she's a little round.
I guess so.
And
go ahead.
And so we go. She's like, yeah, I think we have some in the back, you know, da da da. And she's like, and we're trying to find one of the guys to cut the wood.
Oh no!
And I said, look, I'll cut it, you know, if that's okay. She's like, oh yeah, that's fine. So I fire the saw up and I plop it down there. And she's like lifting the boards. I said, no, don't do that. You're pregnant. And she goes, I'm not pregnant. I'm just fat.
Oh, no.
As I proceed to operate the saw and stack the wood and leave the lumber yard with my tail between my legs.
No kidding.
I could not believe.
Was she laughing or not happy at all?
She was just, she rolled with it.
Okay, that's
so
good.
It might not have been the first time she'd heard it.
Yeah.
It was like she was, she looked, dude, I mean, I'm not going to go anywhere than it.
But you thought she had said something about being pregnant.
I swore that she's mentioned, and you know, maybe I just, from the moment I saw her, I just assumed she was pregnant. You know,
you just planted it
and
in your
everything. Everything she was said was just like supporting that assumption I had made.
I thought you were going to say when she called the guys, you know, from. I thought a lot of people got to witness this embarrassing moment. Hopefully, it was just the two of
you. Just the two of us.
Okay, well, that's.
I'm sure she told you know everybody else. That DA just told me I was pregnant.
It's so. What happened to me when I was in about fifth grade, a family member and myself, a lady pushing a stroller and obviously pregnant walked by, and my family member asked when she was due. And this lady said, I actually just lost the baby. So from that moment on, since I was 10 years old, I will never... Ever. Yeah. So anyhow, I have held fast now for however many decades of never, ever asking a woman if she's pregnant.
I never thought I would do that. Mm-hmm. Never thought I would make that. And I just, it was in my head that this woman was pregnant. And it never even occurred to me that she wasn't. So, and she wasn't. Mm-hmm. So, sorry about that.
Now, your son who is in college.
Yep.
Does he have a serious girlfriend?
He does.
So do you think that there's a wedding on the horizon there?
Who knows? He's been dating her since ninth grade? 10th grade? Somewhere around there?
Yeah. I believe it.
Some early high school. He might even have been junior high.
Because you're...
They've been together quite a long time.
You would like to become a grandparent someday.
Yeah, it'd be kind of fun.
And it just seems like that trajectory is there. Then.
It seems like it.
Very good.
But, I'm not interested in him, like... graduating college and having kids. I don't think that's
a good
idea.
But I just meant like at least there's good prospects there right
now.
Okay, good.
I think so. And she's really great. And we all get along, which is fun. So and they're really good together. You know, they're one of those, she's really outgoing and he's more kind of chill like
that's
me.
Cool.
I'm more introverted. So I think they complement each other. They're fun. They're a fun little couple.
No regrets that you can think of over the course of your life? Or that you'd want to share?
No, there wasn't anything that popped in my head when I saw that question. Yeah. I actually kind of felt good that there wasn't anything like,
Yay.
You know, I don't know.
That's good. Yeah. And no bucket list. Nothing like, I've got to do this before. I mean, dude has gone skydiving 1,600 times.
Yeah, I've had a pretty cool life. And, I think, maybe on the bucket list is to one day do the photography thing professionally. Like, that's actually my career. If I ever retire and I just continue to do that, that would be really fun just to say. That's my job now, but I love this work. It's a blast. I mean, much like you. You eat, drink, sleep this. We all do.
Not much sleep.
Not much sleep. That's the reason. Yeah. But, you know, we're always either thinking about this stupid job or we're doing it. And it's fun. And, you know, as crazy and as nuts as it gets to be sometimes, and sometimes it's a little, it's a lot to handle. We that's the things we can't talk about. But in general, it's fun work.
Yeah.
You know, we could be out digging a ditch or something and that would suck.
Oh,
but the fact that we get to just, play radio every day, it's pretty fun.
No complaints. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you mentioned your website. If people want to check out your photography, do you sell photographs there?
I haven't done that yet. I haven't done any sort of like e-commerce on that site yet, but it's just there to check out.
Could people...
They can hit me back if they want
to buy
something.
Like an email address, contact or something to say, hey.
You can request more info on a photo.
Because I've done that before. I've gone to... There's a photographer who has like a gallery, for lack of a better phrase. By the way, his website, folks, thechickeringproject.com. If you want to check out his stuff. Also, that's his Instagram handle, right?
Yep.
The Chickering Project. But this guy was a great photographer who has taken some of the most iconic photographs in nature ever. Like there's one specific one that features a shark eating a seal
or diving
up and grabbing it or something.
Oh, I think I've seen that.
Yeah. If that photograph is the one, I think it is. It's been so long, I can't remember. But I'm pretty sure that was the one that was famous, you know, a few years back. Anyhow, I went to his website. And it's a gallery, but like you said, it's not set up for e-commerce.
Yeah.
And I reached out to him. I was able to buy some photographs, and he put together this thing because my wife, Carrie, she's a big shark freak. And so I was able to get this guy who, you know, lives on the other side of the planet. I had to figure out krona, U.S. dollar, you know, conversion there.
Yeah.
But anyhow, you guys frustrate me, you and this guy here, because... People go to these websites, and I want to be able to click on something and say,
buy it.
Sell this to me.
Yeah.
So it could save yourself some trouble if you would. I'm just
word of the wise. Well, mine gets a little challenging because, you know, I'm shooting bands that, you know, I'm using somebody else's image. So it gets a little trickier The shark ain't going to sue him for selling the shark.
I don't know, man. If PETA gets involved, you never know. They could supply
a lure.
The
shark provides your rights for this photograph. So, you know, I don't really have any kind of like legal, hey, I'm shooting your show tonight. I'm going to sell stuff. I think they're all, and I give the bands full usage anyway.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a give and take. But like I've got, you know, you're familiar with Leon Bridges? You familiar? No. No, blank. Okay. Local guy, made it big. So he's a Columbia Records artist now. He's amazing.
Huh.
Leon Bridges is terrific. Kind
Sounds
of throwback.
Like somebody I should check out, huh?
Throwback 60s guy a little bit. Music is terrific.
Okay.
But I've got some incredible shots of him that I shot at Fortress Fest last year. I'm not sure I can sell those. You know, so I have to be careful with some of this stuff.
Yeah, okay. But see, as you're documenting this COVID-19 world.
Yep.
Right?
I could sell that all day.
Yeah. So you need to...
Yeah.
Just trying to help you out. You know,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, cool. So
e-commerce is definitely on the next like iteration of the website. I just wanted to have something up that, you know, proved my legitimacy because it was like when I would apply for a photo pass for something like Fortress Fest or like a big concert festival, I didn't have anything as my business card to say, here's my stuff, other than a Flickr page. And that kind of looks a little chintzy.
Yeah.
So at least this has a professional vibe to it. And people can go find photos easily because you can search by date and things like that. So I wanted to make it easy for like, if you were at a show and I was shooting and I gave you my card, I don't have to tell you where they are. Just go look for the date.
Okay.
And then you can find the photos or look for the venue, that kind of thing.
And before I let you go, though, when's the last time you've been skydiving?
Gosh, stopped skydiving long time ago. Let's see.
So that's
Sun was probably 15 years ago.
Okay.
Last skydive.
So that's not something that I could go up and do a tandem jump with you and stuff.
No, not right now. I can hook you up with them, but I can get you connected up with the right people. But yeah, I haven't taken a jump in forever. And it'd be nice with this new camera stuff I have. Like some of these cameras, like these Canon cameras that shoot video.
Okay.
And the video is unbelievable.
Very last question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to go up in a hot air balloon.
Mm-hmm.
Which do you think is more risky?
Oh boy.
The skydiving or the hot air balloon? Plummeting to the earth at how many miles per hour?
120
miles per hour. Or trusting someone to put the right amount of heat to the helium there.
I don't know. Those things scare me a little bit.
Right?
I know. They're just a little freaky.
It almost feels
I always wanted to jump out of one. I never got to jump out of a hot air balloon.
I want to do both. I want to go up there and...
Jumped out of a helicopter. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool. Because what's neat about a helicopter is it's...
Don't jump up!
Yeah. Yeah. Whoops! Duck! No, what's neat about a helicopter versus an airplane's moving forward, right? And you think about when you leave the airplane, you have inertia.
Uh-huh.
You're traveling at the speed of the airplane when you leave the airplane.
Okay.
With a helicopter, you're just hovering, right?
Oh, boy.
So you leave that, and there's this truly kind of weightless dropping feeling.
Oh, no.
It's pretty cool.
It's
And it's the only emergency exit I've ever had out of an airplane.
I wonder if... Yeah. I wonder
Frickin'
if...
helicopters.
That is the same feeling. When I was in high school, a friend of mine was a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day he and I flew around the Southeast. You know, we just little airports, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, mm-hmm. back home.
Just hopping little municipal
exactly.
airports kind
yeah.
of thing. Yeah.
And so he turned it over to me to fly the plane. I think mm-hmm. it was a Cessna, some really yeah. small plane, right? For what seemed like eternity, but yeah. was probably no more than 20 or 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I remember taking the controls and just dropping down
oh, no.
like a ride at Six Flags or something. And I'm like, okay, Wes, take over. I can say I've flown a plane now. Thank you. All right. So... Anyhow, I can only imagine what it's like to actually jump out of
Don't
a perfectly
Keith
good piece
yoke.
Of machinery.
Don't give Keith the yoke.
No, no. No, I can say I flew it 20, 30 seconds.
That's
we're
fine.
Good. Anyway, Rob Chickering, the senior yeah. vice president, to make sure I get all my letters right, all the acronym
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Senior vice president here at Blaze TV, Glenn Beck's network that he keeps on the air. Thank you so much for spending time with me today.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for asking.
Sure thing.
This has been At the Mic with Keith, an independent podcast production. Look for At the Mic Show on Twitter to connect.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.